Welcome again to Mystic Babylon. This is my seventh recording. Today we will have two other poets besides me. This time we have two poets from the Big Sur area named Carolyn Kleefeld and David Dunn. They are both published, and when they introduce themselves, they will give all their personal information about their lives, their books, and web locations. May I remind you to post comments if you can, and if you are in the Bay Area and are published, contact me about being on my podcast through my email. Also, if you don't know, all my poetry that I'm reading myself is from my book, Spirits of Bondage and Inherent Transcendence. And you can buy it almost anywhere on the internet. I will read first. The first poem I'm going to read, Love Yoga or Fundamental Yoga, asks the question, do gurus really understand fundamentals, or do they teach unreachable goals that are too high to understand and don't seem to relate to what is at hand? I think love can be down to earth, but it seems it is never taught that way out front. Here is the poem. When I was young, I tried to make love succeed where hatred would impede. That was when fundamental reality had lost its grace. Me, with the ignorance of evil, I had to stare at this loss of fundamentality straight in the face. Society lost its love judgmentally and only knew it superficially. I decided I had to understand how society's love was thwarted by ignorance and stupidity. Instead of seeing love with regular eyes, society wore sunglasses to filter out the love. I couldn't see through the lies. People forgot how love was scarce and almost always came from above and didn't fit like a glove. This was all like some Indian gurus taught, and it wasn't about love or knowing the fundamentals. It was more about how to pass the buck when love became an empty promise and just an illusion where friends say lots of luck. For this reason, I wish I knew life's fundamentals rather than love's imperatives. Thank you. The second poem is Maturity and the Innocent Blunder. This poem is about somebody who I envied for some strange reason, even though he looked like a Georgia peanut farmer. And besides the fact that he treated me as if I blundered and muffed up about everything I did. If only I had known as much about goober peas as him. Here is the poem. There were peanuts besides the path, but since I was innocent to things in my life being like peanuts, I didn't notice or eat them. Nor contrarily was I aware that to the reverse of this theory, that there were special peanuts of wisdom that could be had, or that there was anything special about Georgia. If I ever did get any wisdom from Georgia's peanuts, I would be miffing in the beginning and miffing in the middle, hoping that in the end my crusty mind and I would become known as the man who eats peanuts. Also, I remember I had a tattoo on my arm when I was young, but it wasn't deep, so it went away. I will never know why in a young boy's dream I had put that tattoo there, but I will think until I am gray, sort of hoping that if the tattoo had said, "Wake up from life, sleepyhead," it might have been good if the tattoo had stayed. Still, I have a higher wish as I walk this path of life, knowing that I am partly asleep, and wishing that my lips would have told me to say awake rather than a tattoo. But I am a man now, and whether I learned it the wrong way or not, I know right from left. Many times I would grope with my eyes, and my thoughts would be directed down my arms to my hands, but my nervous fingers would shake and not grasp things deftly, just like when the mind is trying to grasp things. When I was young, I was a master at easy books, but I couldn't learn anything from those stories about crooks. I did not want the crook in the book to say, "Walk this way." Thank you. This last poem is entitled The Multi-Armed River Deity. This poem is about an experience I had over a period of about 2 weeks when I was young and lived in Mexico of learning a deep form of Indian meditation called Meditation on the Sound Current. In it, I could close my eyes at any time and merge with this sound current, much like a river of sound and water that was made up of the one mind. It was like a lazy river made up of pure ecstasy. Here is the poem. Why do I have to explain every bend and branch of the river of life? Do you have all of its branches, like the lines of a finger, branching the same way the rivers branch out across the world in a microcosm in your hand? Does the river have to know the rocks in its way that block its existence? Must it know the crooked bend? Doesn't it get there in the end? Does a river have to know why it flows as it picks up dirt as it flows? Who cares where the dirt turned to mud goes? Must it reach beyond the dying flow as it forms a swamp, like the mind does on a dismal day? I know I too am like the multi-armed river of life, but do I have to prove that I am undivided, unlike a river or a limited individual that has only one arm or channel? The river of life has a strong will, but through thousands of quirks, it is pushed and molded by the nearly immobile earth. Do rivers meander as they slightly change their path, or is meandering more defined as an innocent, joyous bend in its usual routine, not to be called meandering? The river of life slowly leads to the ocean and mixes with the salty water and eventually becomes indivisible. Must I, too, become indivisible? Thank you.
Hi, my name's David Dunn, poet and artist from Big Sur, California. Going to read a few poems. Some of my art and poetry can be seen on my friend's website, CarolynMaryKleefeld.com. She'll be reading after me. The first poem is called At the Throne of Love. The door, the gate, the path, the destination. Where are we going and where have we been? Redemption means moral reconciliation. It means asking for what is wrong. It means receiving what is right. It means bowing again at the throne of love. It means destiny. It means compassionate discernment. It means denial and death. It means humility. It means grace. It means unreasonable acceptance. It means irrational abandonment. It means bowing again at the throne of love. It means drinking the blood of your mother, brother, sister, and father. It means facing the cracked mirror of desire. It means mending the mirror. It means polishing the mirror. It means walking away from the mirror. It means bowing again at the throne of love. Second poem is called While We Are Human. I never said I was enlightened. I am hungering for the mortal you. I cannot save you for eternity. I need you now. I want you here. Not infinitely, not metaphysically, but humanly, humbly. I am not a Buddhist, for I have an intricate, complex, worldly desire for you, and I am hopelessly attached to the way you appear, the way you feel, the way you smell. I am not a king, but women have had me. Now I am no worse than a beggar seeking you. I am not a saint. Maybe I'm a sinner, and you are not an angel. So come to me. Come to me now, while we are human. Third poem, O Children. O children who run from the busy group to gather petals for your dreams. O children who wander hopelessly, whose tears are sometimes a wild scream. O children who feel the caressing whispers of all that is quiet, like plants and flowers and trees. O children just being born, and O children poor and almost forlorn. O children who wonder and care not for our sensible answers. What is a star, a house, a world? O children whose laughter is like the early beginnings of an erotic sting. O children, O children, O child of my mother's dream. What was never there? Her dark eyes? What was she thinking? What was always there? Her dark eyes? What was I thinking? And the rain was dripping, and the clock was ticking. When I went to sleep, and when I awoke, she was there. I was never without her. When I woke, and when I slept, when I walked, and when I sat, when I smiled or cried, when I said hello to someone, or when I said goodbye. She was like a misty river or a city street, it did not matter. Sometimes she wore black, other times yellow. Or she would say, when you come tomorrow, what color would you like me to be wearing? I would always answer, whatever pleases you, that would please me. But since you asked, I love red, I said. Like a thread woven into my coat, we were entwined. And words were of no consequence. Words were useless. We were beyond words. Smiling words, pleading words, hungry words, thirsty words. We seldom needed them. And she seemed to know my wishes long before I gave a hint. I'll finish with the love song. Where are you? Are you sleeping now, or are you awake? Where are your hands? Where are your lips? Your arms? Are you here? Is anything ever really here? Are you mine? Tell me. Do you know? Tell me. Where are your eyes? What are you wearing? What soft thing falls to your flesh like the breaths of roses? What necklace today is so fortunate to be worn by you? What sparkling gems are laughing at their good luck? Where are you now? Are you wearing your hair up, or is it down? Oh, blessed shoulders. Do you feel my love? Do you share my freedom? Is that your hand on me? The flesh too is a spirit, and yours is like dripping flowers. Every line, every form of your flashing beauty, every shadow of shadow that forms your face, every birthing light. Do you feel me? Is every cell that bears you bearing my light? My love, are the atoms of your flesh dancing with joy? Do you care? Tell me. There is not an animal or an angel in all the kingdoms thirsting more than my blood for you. Do you think poets kiss differently? Are you smiling, or are your lips parted with dreams and desires like the lovers of red dawns? Let me place upon you more than my hands, more than my lips, my blood. Oh, hi, back again, David Dunn. I thought I would do one more piece for you. This is called Pages from a Dream for Hermann Hesse. Even the wind was calling. Even the great power-ridden wind, from what unimaginable distances, uninhibited, blew and blew, calling and calling, at night ominous and fierce, thrashing the cabin walls, pounding and pounding the worn cedars, knocking in haste at my door, the brave trees screaming outside, only to subside, the wind, like a sleepy child settles down from excited play, subsides, and the dawn arrives, total innocence, and the sun is risen. The wind, now a soft breeze over the near sea, still calling, strangely calling to my soul, which has spread itself out under the sky, bathing like a dove, cooing in the warm sun. I was calling the sun to greet me. I was calling my lover, the giver, who grows flowers on lonely hillsides. Little birds sing in the bushes. I was calling my lover, the sun, to come and sit beside me, to hold my hand a while, to talk and play, to press our warm lips together. And then, whispering with laughter, we remember the storm-fed wind flying from the previous night. Oh, how we can laugh now, having endured the unsettled rush of the raging elements. Oh, how we can pretend now, in our brute human spirits, our deceptive and longing hearts turn still, but not completely. Though we are quieter now, we are almost redeemed. And our thoughts are warmer, a little wiser to the mystery of violence, a little more tender for what we have tasted, the bitter seed. Now grows the lovely fruit. It was a day when nothing of the past mattered, neither anything learned or remembered. Nothing of the past was of consequence. On a day like this, when the sun shines in the garden of no time, by the river, near the meadow of love. Sometimes no words should be uttered, only silence, only solitude and great silence. Solitude like a star, quietness like a Lord's presence, a God's voice, if there be gods. Then let's hope some would simply be gods of quietness. And while we are at it, we might as well have gods of trees, gods of flowers, river gods, little children gods, and of course, beautiful goddesses like sensuous swans under the starry night. She appeared as if in a dream, but more real than my fantasy. She wore the stars on her shoulders, and their light loved to be in her eyes. Was she divine? I doubt it, but rather a mere figment of my poetic mind. But she is in my arms, she is in my heart, my blood. She rests there, and she thrives there. She sings songs in the night to the chosen, to the ones who wander with the poets, down the dark soul corridors, all the way through to the rooms of the delusions of saints. And there she will wait for you to enter and to become death itself. She will wait for you. She will neither help nor hold you, but wait for you as you move through the myriad shadows of illusions. So she and the world moved in a dream, all white and clear, almost transparent, something ghost-like in her form, while still human and lovely. Was it a dream? For wasn't she here in my room, moving about and talking? And wasn't life here after all as well, moving and breathing, being and growing? Outside, the wind had begun screaming again, blowing across the roof with a young roar like a hungry kitten, scratching the faded shingles, wanting to come in. But when I opened the door, the wind was gone. And my dreams, too, disappeared, faded out from existence like smoke. Everything was gone. Nothing moved or uttered a sound. Everything was wrapped and held in quietness. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Mary Kleefeld, and I want to thank John Rhodes for having us here today. My first experiment was a podcast recording, and thank you for being there with your ears and your hearts, as Benjamin D. Caceres would say to his audience. Anyway, I was born in England, grew up in Santa Monica, where when I was growing up, on the wall of my house were hundreds of butterfly cocoons, which later symbolized my lifelong fascination with transformation and consciousness. And later on, I wrote 7 books, and they're being used in university courses in those subjects of consciousness, etc. And David and my latest book is Kissing Darkness, which is a lover's dialogue of poems and art. And if you want any other information, visit carolynmaryclefeld.com, and you will see David and my visual work and poetry, and I'll soon have a slideshow. Anyway, thanks to John Rhodes that we're here today. And I'll read a selection of my latest poetry. And also I have some earlier ones, so I'm going to read the first few will be my latest, which is experimenting with a whole different place that I'm coming from, and then after that there'll be the older, so-called older ones. Okay, so the first one is The Diamond Buckle. She was partly turned on and partly turned off, and in between was her diamond buckle, sewed on to an old leather belt. Yes, partly turned off and partly turned on, passionate in dream, a discomfort with life. Yes, on and off with a diamond buckle, in the old leather belt demanding she live. Then blossomed a springtime, when her rhythm swept her beyond her belt and threw away the buckle. She ran free as a child, dancing with the wind, and the wild beasts devoured her discomfort. Life had digested her anew, and by some mysterious token lent beat to her once withered heart. She rode on the back of a white egret's tail and dropped her fallen self to the sea, watching it dissolve into salt. That was one of my most recent, playing, you know, with a new way of writing poetry. And here is another experiment called Buries the Doom. She smashes her hell against her lover's shell, then celebrates by ringing an ancient tortoise bell. The fire flame leaps, the washing machine creeps, the silence is pregnant with anonymous thieves. And I wonder how it all became this way. Revolution and chaos, love and blunder, is that what lies asunder? Stomp on the crosses, let the sunbeams in. A giant ship has sunk, and the oceans are flooded. The people have drowned, unable to breathe, stuck in the sludge of an uncaring sea. Give me jasmine and scarlet moons, chanting soul-devouring music that buries the doom. This is a very recent one. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I mentioned I live in Big Sur, so I'm very involved with the powerful land there. And this was inspired by being at the river after all this long siege of storms. Anyway, it's called Between the Cold Hard Rocks. Between the cold hard rocks gushes the leaping river, sweet and fierce. Between the ravines of smoldering heart, a river flows, a human climate that can taste like salt. Underneath the cold, hard rocks of misunderstanding that through humans begets war, lie the lucid waters from the core that, ignoring words and opinions, just flow. This is another recent one. It's called A Variety of Storms. In a radiance of innocence, the sun shines savagely, having no memory of last night's brutal storm, or of the headless tempests whose winds of fury battered our souls. The following afternoon, after that storm had subsided, a man casually strolls by, wrapped in a fuzzy lamb's robe, the scars of his previous night's love squall masked, or perhaps forgotten for the moment. In distant lands, those who have escaped the deadly bombs clench their teeth in a ghetto of desperation, while above them the beaming orb holds their freedom in the distance. I'm going to read some earlier work now. It's in the last couple of years. This one is called As a Flag. Over the years, pieces of myself have died. The winds of time have hurled themselves relentlessly against my anthem. I stand now as a flag to my experiences, worn and tattered on the cliff's edge, gazing out to sea. Yet I keep singing, like the birds after the storms, like the sun-drenched day, smiling with innocence after the wind's assault, falling again into the eternal moment, I bow like a wavering flag before the sun. This is called O Vanished Dream. You vanish into the unsleeping dark, carrying the gold of my heart in your pocket. The embrace of your glance lingers, even as your feet walk you away. Although your body leaves, you are still here, like ether in the fathomless night. You hang from the ceiling in the homeless air, spinning passion's nest. Your absent touch still warms my breast. I wander on, stumbling into meadows of black stars sprouting, strewn across the fields of heaven's dome, and pluck one for you, my darling vanished dream. I think I have time for one more. And this is called The Ether of Romantic Illusion. We revisit like strangers who keep forgetting that we have murdered one another many times, and who, not recognizing each other, remarry. We have let each other's heart die like black suns abandoned within our charred caves, vomiting each other's ashes into the lost gutters of time. Is this what remains of our grand passion? Countless anonymous murders with flights to cities of fantasy? Have the gods of seduction masked our faces again with the ether of romantic illusion? Well, thank you.
This ends Mystic Babylon's 7th podcast. I hope you can come back in 2 weeks. And oh, by the way, Carolyn and David are traditionally published. Thank you very much.